Hello, hello. This is Brooke Devard, and you're listening to the Naked Beauty Podcast. Now, I told you all I had some incredible conversations coming up, and this is one of the ones that I'm so excited about because I talk to so many founders on the show. I talk to so many beauty consumers and beauty editors. But when it comes to founders, one of the things that is the most important, passion, creativity, inspiration, that's all very important. But let's be honest, it's really money. It's capital that is going to make or break a brand. And today's guest, Kendra Bracken Ferguson, is doing the very important work of getting capital into Black founders' hands through Brain Trust Fund, a venture fund dedicated to investing in Black beauty and wellness founders. Kendra has the distinction of being one of only 100 Black women to have ever raised $1 million in investment for her first company. She's launched three companies herself and has achieved over $1 million in revenue for each within the first 2 years or less. Talk about goals. I talked to Kendra about my first year being a business owner, how I could scale, how I could grow, and she had some incredible advice for me. For all of the entrepreneurs that are listening to this, you are going to find a ton of insight and wisdom. But even for my people that are in corporate, she talks a lot about finding your North Star, owning your voice, owning your career trajectory. She and I also have some shared corporate history, which is very interesting, but she talked about what she took away from each of those jobs, how the challenges at each of those companies allowed her to be the powerhouse in business that she is today. Kendra is a transformative brand builder and visionary leader, as well as the secret ingredient in guiding and monetizing more than 200 influencer-driven brands, which have collectively garnered more than $100 million in revenue. I had a chance to meet Kendra at a beautiful event in the Hamptons for 13 Loon. We all know and love 13 Loon, which is an incredible retail experience where you can shop incredible Black-owned beauty. But she has just always been someone that has stood out to me as a leader, someone with so much ambition, someone that is really here for the cause. You can tell she is so passionate about this work. And now she has one more thing to add to her resume. She is an author. Kendra's new book, which has just come out, The Beauty of Success, How to Start, Grow, and Accelerate Your Brand. The Beauty of Success covers Kendra's entrepreneurship journey and covers her pillars of community, mentorship, education, and capital. And of course, at the end of the day, Kendra is a beauty girl. She tries it all. I got all of her favorite product recommendations, the Black beauty founders that she's really excited about, the brands that she's excited about investing in. And she really just keeps it real about how to scale and grow your business in a way that's inspiring and tangible. You guys are going to love hearing from Kendra. Let's get into the episode. You'll know real when you get it. It will say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like a gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh, every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue check mark that says authenticity guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, Solon logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms. All right, Kendra Bracken Ferguson, welcome to Naked Beauty. So excited to have you on.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me. You know I'm such a fangirl, so this is fantastic.
Well, you're so amazing, and you're on your book tour. Congratulations.
You're on an epic book tour. Yes,
okay.
It's out.
Okay, I need to order mine today, but it is called The Beauty of Success, Start, Grow, and Accelerate Your Brand. And this is work that you have been dedicated to throughout your career. And it's such important work, especially for Black women in the beauty space. So I'm so excited to get into all of the entrepreneur behind the scenes things that so many people don't know about.
Thank you. You know, it's so funny because as we're doing things and we're working and we're making things happen, we don't always have a chance to reflect on what has happened and think about the success and how far we've come and what we've learned. And I've been so fortunate that I've had an executive coach since literally my first business that I started in 2010. So she is always instilling in me, like, write it down so you don't forget the miracles. And so every experience I've had, I've really taken the time to write down what I learned, what happened, you know, what I didn't agree with, what I did agree with. And so it's been really exciting to kind of crystallize that and bring it to life in this point of my career, knowing that there's still so much more that my career will accelerate to.
Yes. And what I also love about so much of the advice that you give is that it's not just for entrepreneurs. It could be for intrapreneurs or someone that's like climbing the corporate ladder, right? Like a lot of the things, the kind of hygiene that you need to be successful works if you're starting your own business or you work for someone else. So I feel like this is going to be a conversation that's helpful for anyone trying to build their career, build their brand, build their personal brand.
Absolutely. And I'm so glad you said that, because I literally had an entire vision, like growing up and going through college, about climbing the corporate ladder and being the youngest VP and running divisions and sitting in boardrooms. And I had that experience, and I did become the youngest VP at Fleischmann, and I did do all of these things. And then when I had the opportunity to meet my first business partner, Karen Rabinovitz, and start Digital Brand Architects, which is so long ago.
Wow, I did not know that you were behind DBA. I mean, that was like the first and still, I think, the biggest influencer agency, correct?
Yeah. So Karen and I actually co-founded Digital Brand Architects in Karen's kitchen. And it's so funny because I was working at Ralph Lauren at the time. I was the first director of digital media at Ralph Lauren, and I had been recruited.
Wait. We weren't at Ralph Lauren the same. I would have known if there was a black, because I was at Ralph Lauren. Wait, were you at 650 or 725? Digital side, you were 725.
I was 650. So I started, I was the first director of digital media in 2009. So 2008, 2009. So before there was Instagram, Pinterest.
Okay. What year did you leave?
2010 to start DBA.
Listen, working at Ralph Lauren, in my opinion, also on the digital side, doing social and digital marketing, What a masterclass in what it takes to create a strong brand. Like that brand book, the digital archive, like just how closely they adhere to the vision of the world of Ralph Lauren. It's a very powerful, I think for me, it was early in my career. I was such a student at that point. And I feel like it taught me so much about how to maintain a strong brand.
Absolutely. And the interesting thing is that I was literally the first person in the role. And so having to launch the brand and the dynamics, which you experienced sitting with David Lauren, like 4 hours talking about why is this blogger wearing Ralph Lauren, and figuring out how to take such a historic and beautiful brand and then put it in social that can be messy. And I learned so much because I reported in to David and the head of CorpCom and the head of marketing and the head of advertising. And David had this vision that because I was touching social, I had to report it to everyone. So I had generals with every division. So understanding what that looked like, and then sitting with Roger Farah, who was the CFO at the time, and saying, we made this much from Facebook, but having to really teach myself as like a team of one. When I was leaving Fleischmann to go to Ralph Lauren, they were like, you're going to be bored. You're going in-house. You know, you're so good with working with all the other brands. And I'm like, it basically was like being your own agency in-house, which is what they ended up creating. And so I think about that experience, especially with a lot of entrepreneurs, because I think that it's fun. I have so many. I just taught a capstone entrepreneur class at Spelman. And so many of those students are like, I started a business. I'm going to graduate and run my company. And that is fine. But I do know that for me, that groundwork, that foundation of being in corporate, understanding how to navigate politics down to how do you work a mail room to get things where they need to go. Like it was so fundamental in my coaching and training to be an entrepreneur. And honestly, like I loved Ralph Lauren. I would have stayed there, but by chance I met Karen, and literally I texted her one Saturday morning. She called me. I said, I have an idea to manage bloggers. She said, me too. She's like, I have this name, Digital Brand Architects, and a logo. We put a website up that same day, got our husbands together Sunday, filed for an LLC Monday. And I went to David and was like, I'm going to manage bloggers. And so it was really this acceleration because we saw it. We didn't know all the pieces. We didn't have a fancy big bank account, but we knew that bloggers, as it were back then, were going to be the future.
I love that you have that background of understanding the influence of bloggers and creators. I think now we've seen how creators create some of the most successful brands because they have community. It's like not anyone can make a product, but making a product, I think, in my personal opinion, I'd be curious what you think. I think building a community that cares about you is much harder than making a product.
So it's interesting because they go hand in hand, but then they're also separate, right? And the community piece is what really fuels so much of the product engagement and stickiness. And I always say that I'm a community builder because I agree with you, like building a community, getting people to buy into your vision, living up to that vision and the expectation that people have, keeping people engaged and really supporting and being that voice, it's really hard. And building a product is hard as well, but it's a different type of muscle and energy and brain. If we're talking at the core of just building a product, not necessarily a brand, but a physical product that you can touch and feel and use. And I completely agree with you. And I think that people underestimate the power of what community does for a product and the infusion of that in building a holistic brand.
Yes. I'd be so curious, what brands do you think are doing a great job now of building community?
Yeah, I think that there's a few brands doing it really well. I look at Acromix and Kim Lewis and what they're doing in terms of their curl community. They have, 40, 50,000 followers in their Facebook group of hardcore dedicated customers. They built a brand all on D2C and like multiple millions before they even went into retail. You know, they turned down Shark Tank and went on their own and became one of the first brands to raise more than $5 million through crowdfunding. They did that because it was a community first led brand and they spent a lot of time doing it. And even now, when you look at their crowdfunding campaign, their success is coming because at the end of the day, let me say this, they have a dynamic product and that product is fueled from a long tail perspective of sustainability because they have a community.
Yes. And DTC is interesting because you and I will both remember when brands started saying that they were going to sell directly to consumers like Glossier, that was unheard of. I mean, it really was unheard of. Like people were like, you can have a beauty brand that people will buy online without touching it and seeing it and feeling it on the sales floor of like a Saks or an Ulta Beauty. But all of the rules have changed now. And I feel like brands don't even want to be in retail if they can help it.
I think that there's the benefit to both. If you have a solid brand, the right resources, and you're prepared to know what you're getting into, right? Because D2C is also not free. What did David Lauren tell us? Cheap and cheerful. You can do it and you can maximize and you can extend your dollars further, especially from a margins perspective. But even with D2C, you still have to invest in community and marketing and getting people to you where the products are. But there are benefits to that and there are control elements to that. And I do think that retail does work for some founders, but the preparation of what that looks like, again, the long tail of resources, of finances, getting into retail is certainly not free. D2C does become more cost efficient, but you also have to look at the full flywheel of what's going to serve your brand. And if you get to retail, can you stay in retail? Because otherwise, what would have been the point?
Social media is pretty much table stakes for any brand now. You have to show up, and increasingly founders are expected to show up on social. It's funny, with the launch of Sacred, there was a lot of conversation of like, we need to see Beyonce like do wash day, and we need to see like a microscopic camera on her scalp. I'm like, everyone needs to just take a step back, because have we ever seen Paul Mitchell do his wash day routine? I don't even know what that man looks like, you know? But people just crave that intimacy. They crave hearing from the founders. Now, you, of course, coach a lot of founders and work with a lot of founders and help them in their efforts to scale their businesses. What do you share with founders who are maybe, I don't want to say resentful, but they're like, hey, I'm not a social media person. Like, I wanted to build a business. I don't really care about making a TikTok or showing up on Reels. How do you talk to founders about the importance of that?
So it's really interesting because our voices are so powerful, and the differentiation point, whenever you start to think about how many brands can really be successful on shelf or in D2C, you have to use your voice and your presence and your story and the DNA of the brand to help cut through the clutter. Oh my gosh, Brooke, I was literally on a coaching session with my executive coach, and she was like reminding me how I didn't want to be on social. I was like, I'm behind. I was PR. I was like digital. Like, my job is to make other people look good, to create their platform and help them create a voice. And she's like, as a founder helping other founders, you have to be more visible. And even mm-hmm. though it doesn't feel like you have as many followers or you have this and that, like, your voice matters. And everybody, the thing that I love about social is that everybody has their own sphere of influence, right? We are all influencing someone, and some of us influence more than others, but it's important. And I do think as a founder, again, it's what game are you playing in terms of creating pathways and ecosystems that will drive the most success for your brand and the most purchase, right? And drive the most consumers. Otherwise, like, this is a hobby. This is not a true profit-driven brand. And so you have to get outside of yourself and really figure out what makes your company unique. Why did you start it? Like, what I loved, and you can attest to this, we worked for one of the most influential, powerful, historic families in our careers. And what I got from that, I will never forget, because we sat outside of Ralph's office, Mr. Lauren's office, and sitting in those meetings, I sat in a meeting with his wealth management team when he was buying back his licensees. And I said, mm-hmm. I want to have a wealth management team. And so I have to step outside of myself and follow what's happening in our industry to make sure that I can sit on top of what I'm building, and that for me, I can create a platform to bring others along. So it's really about, what's your story? Why are you unique? How do you create content around it? And unfortunately, it is our job to do it. Now, mm-hmm. people will do it at varying degrees. That doesn't mean you have to be on every single platform, but we can be our biggest marketing line item when done correctly, that will enable us to put money into other things that will drive our business forward. So I will get on my high horse, because I'm like, guys, if I can do it and I was a background person, get your product out, say a few things, or figure out someone else in the company who can. But it is table stakes for cutting through the clutter of everything that's on shelf.
Absolutely. People want to connect to your story, and you have to use these free tools that we have available to tell your story. Now, I want to go back to a story I heard about you. So I know that you're close with Sir John, and he actually wrote the foreword to the book. When I brought you up on my episode with him, he was like, Kendra got up, I don't know if it was at Gwyneth Paltrow's house, but it was a gathering commissioned by Gwyneth Paltrow. Gwyneth Paltrow brought some people together. He's like, and Kendra stood up in that meeting, and she was like talking that talk. And I was like, who is this woman? So I want to know what you said in this meeting with Gwyneth Paltrow, this gathering.
It's so funny. You know how I feel. I love that episode that you guys did. And as you know, Sir John is just like such a light and energy. Yeah. I literally was like, we were texting about something today, and it's those relationships where you know someone has your back and you have theirs. And it's so funny. So we were at Gwyneth Paltrow's house in the backyard, and there was me and another woman, Moj and Gwyneth, and it was my turn to talk. And I was just like, fired up about the impact we were making and Black founders and how we're driving trends and influence and technology, and like, you know, how it also takes allies. Because as we know, there's that whole thing, how many people do we have to educate? How much do we have to say? And whenever you can find true allies, which is truly who Gwyneth is, what she does, why we were even there, I literally was like on my running for president, like, we're allies and we're here and we're creating support and it's impact and all of us working together, and these are the stats. And it was such a wonderful night. And he did, like, we connected after that and have been together ever since.
I love that. And it is so important to find your allies and people that have your back in this industry. I do find that the beauty community is extremely tight knit, and for the most part, like, willing to be helpful to each other. I know that Teen Loon is in your kind of portfolio of brands. And I think about, when I walk into 13 Loon and I see all of the brands on the shelf, I'm like, I know all of these women, you know, and some men, but like that sense of community and how everyone supports each other, but then also how these businesses and retail environments are growing so that we can have even this podcast. You know, I see my podcast is also an avenue to help support so many of these Black founders. So yeah, the space is just growing and so amazing.
I have to stop you because, and I also have to thank you because your podcast is a source of highlighting, recognizing, bringing people on. Like, you have created such a lane of empowerment for all of us. Like, it's an honor to be here with you and to think about you as the future of content and beauty and how we come together and how we share our voices. And I truly believe it's the only way that we're going to have success, not just as individuals, but as an entire community and protecting the industry that we love. So thank you to you, because I know that it's not easy to do what you do and all you do at the same time and still show up for everyone and share your platform.
Well, thank you so much for saying that. You know, it takes teamwork. We were talking with my producer earlier, like every Monday there's a new episode, you know, and like, we don't have to do it, but you talk so well about finding your North Star. And once you have that North Star, like for me, my North Star is I want to tell thoughtful beauty stories that are inclusive. I want to inspire people with these conversations. That's what kind of keeps me going. That's what keeps me like burning the midnight oil. How did you find your North Star and what is your North Star?
Gosh, I know, because we know the highs are high and the lows get a little bit low and crazy. And that was also one of the beauties of being able to write my new book, The Beauty of Success, Start, Grow, and Accelerate Your Brand, was highlighting that and connecting the pieces of what I believe personally and professionally. And so for me, you know, I am very much centered in this notion of brain trust. My second company after DBA, I was sitting in my office at DBA actually thinking about, we had just raised money. I became part of that first group of Black women to raise more than $1 million. All of these things were happening, and yet I was so disconnected to my co-founders. Difference, views, alignment, all these different things. And so I was sitting in my office, like, what have I learned? And it was that I love being around smart people. Everyone is smart in their own right. And I love working in community. And I also understood the value and importance of trust. Trust was never something that I just like singled out. I always knew that I trusted people very easily and quickly, and I expected people to trust me. But in business, as we know, not everyone is trustworthy. And so I literally wrote brain trust on my board. And that became, back in 2015, really my North Star. And from brain trust, believing that as like-minded people that we trust, we can solve problems, I then started to think about, how do you do that? And it's really about community. It's about mentorship, it's about education, and it's about capital. And so even in the start of the book, I talk about, these are my pillars, and they don't just stop in business. They resonate in everything that I do, the friendships that I make, my family, how we show up together. And that becomes the foundation for then how I've been able to grow and how I've been able to succeed. And so I always say to people, you have to figure out your pillars. What do you believe? What's important to you? And the next piece of that is claiming your non-negotiables. There are things that I did in my first company that I will never do again, but I had to go through that journey. And so because I know what my pillars are, I'm able to claim what my non-negotiables are so that I can keep fulfilling my path and my journey. And so I talk a lot about that in the book. How do you do it? What does it look like? And the other thing is that my book also pulls in 18 stories from other guests on my podcast, Business of the Beat, so that if we're truly going to be in community, getting mentorship, being educated, we have to look at all of the other voices that can be a source of inspiration for us.
So what are your pillars and what are your non-negotiables?
So my pillars are community, mentorship, education, and capital. And they really play out in everything that I do. So through Brain Trust from an agency perspective to Brain Trust Founders Studio, which is now the largest membership-based platform for Black founders of beauty and wellness. We're all about community. We're all about our virtual programming that happens every month, our on-demand learning center, so that we can encompass mentorship and education. And then we have our Brain Trust Fund. You mentioned 13 Loon. We have a $15 million Brain Trust Fund that further invests in Black founders, beauty and wellness, so that they can grow and accelerate their businesses. And so when I think about how do my pillars come to life? It's through everything grounded in what I do. And then when I think about my non-negotiables, it's really, I'm not going to settle for things that one, don't enable me to be the highest and best use of myself. And that is connecting people, being a mentor, creating spaces and platforms for inclusive voices to succeed. And then people who fundamentally don't align with the value of being of service to other people. I will not allow myself to be around takers who are also not givers. I don't let myself be a taker. And then I also think that there is this, how are you going to let people treat you? You know, it's interesting because even when we talk about DBA and you not knowing, that's because my co-founder tried to erase me. She literally tried to act as though and said it and pressed that she created the company. And it's simply not true.
I was going to say, the fact that you as a Black woman were the co-founder and I being as deep in the digital space as I am, did not know that. It's like, I have trauma for you hearing that because yeah, that's insane.
Well, and the interesting thing, and I talk about it in the book, is we can never let anyone have so much power that they think that you can erase me. And so the fact that she thought that she could do that showed me that I needed to stand in my power and show up differently as I accelerated in my career. Right. Yeah. And I remember being like, why would you do that when without Karen and I starting this company, there would be no you or a company to lead? And giving her props for saying you took the company into a place where it needed to go. So let's all reward each other. And it's funny because when the press came out about DBA selling, my publicist called and was like, no, Kendra co-founded this. And editor said, we don't believe you. And my press person had to show them the article from the New York Times that came out when we launched it with Karen and I basically talking about the company and the Women's Wear Daily article where it said, and Raina Pinchansky was hired as an employee. And that's, to me, it's like, it doesn't even have to be that way. And so to intentionally try to demoralize, erase someone, like it's just, it's so much evil that I was like, you know what, let me just separate myself because I know who I am and I know what I did and I know where my success lies. And so I feel this like such sense of like beauty and pride because it still exists. And we changed the lives for so many influencers and created this beautiful landscape that it's now enabled me to claim my confidence, to stand in my power, to say what my non-negotiables are, and to say no one will ever try to erase me again because I am protected.
And you've done it multiple times over, right? Like that's your magic. That's your brilliance. That's your intelligence. No one can take that from you. I mean, Black founders are up against a lot. And you mentioned the stats. I would love to talk through some of these stats around the discrepancies between what Black founders are able to get in capital versus non-Black founders. Are you able to share some of those?
Yeah, I think the most public stat that we talk about, which it's interesting because it's actually declining. So less than 1% of Black founders, which is actually dipped to even lower than that for Black female founders, receive venture capital. And so there's a few things at play. And I think now kind of being a venture capitalist and having my own fund, I see it in so many different ways. And the glaring piece, being someone who's investing in founders who look like me, is those founders are saying, wow, I have never even met another Black female founder who knows beauty, or I have to spend so much time trying to get past who are you and what are you do? And just because you're a Black founder, your brand can support everyone else, that we're so fatigued by the time we can even get to the numbers that the deal is off the table. And so part of it is, if you don't have representation at the seats of people who are holding capital, it is a longer lead time to convert those people into understanding your business and who you are, right? And so that's where the systemic racism comes into play, because it's the age old, like we feel comfortable with people who look like us, or we were all in this country club or golf club and there weren't other people. And so we didn't even know that these brands existed. And so part of it is, how do we generate more exposure? Thank you, 15% pledge for opening everyone's eyes and doors. And then thank you to all of the organizations, Buy From a Black Woman, Black Beauty Collective, 13 Loon, Black Ambition Prize, where we're putting founders front and center. And we're saying it's not just the right thing to do, but look at the numbers. Like we're getting ready to release the second edition of our economic advancement report. And we did that because I believe in verifiable, tangible results about the growth and the benefits of investing in our companies. And when I say our, I mean Black founded companies, right? And so in our report, we showed that founders in our community, our Brain Trust Founder Studio community, went from 20 million in revenue to 100 million in revenue. And then as of last year, 142 million in revenue. Now that is significant because one, we weren't tracking what was happening in a substantial way in the hundreds of millions of dollars and showing the impact from an economic perspective in our industry. The other thing that we're finding is that Black founders are creating products for majority consumers. And I've had founders tell me, I was so scared to even put my picture on the website because I knew that I would lose consumers because everyone would say it was just for Black people. And so we have to make sure that we are creating the products that, of course, they're efficacious. Of course, we're doing what we say, but that we are showing ourselves. We're showing the results. We're showing the growth. We're showing the acceleration. And then on my side, my job is to bring in additional sources of capital for these founders. And whether it's people who look like us or allies, you know, we raised our first fund. 72% of our investors are women. We are the only fund like that who can tout those numbers in terms of diversity and in terms of growth from a limited partner or LP community. And so right there, I'm so proud of the work that we're doing because that's also going to open doors and release barriers for people who look like us to then understand the dynamics of investing in our businesses.
Amazing. Well, accelerating your business, capital is, of course, incredibly helpful, but there are also other ways to accelerate your brand and develop your product. So I'd love to hear from you. What are some ways that people that may be in the early stages of their founder journey, what are some ways that they can accelerate their business that don't involve fundraising?
So I think there's a few things. And I think it also goes back to the fact that we've created this version through social media that businesses are only successful if they're raising a whole lot of money. Or yes, businesses are only successful if they become unicorn businesses.
Can I pause you there, Kendra? Because I think also we saw with a lot of these brands that have recently been exposed as they raised millions and millions of dollars, a lot of them in like 2020, 2021, raised a lot of money, but are not profitable. They are simply, the money comes in, they have these huge teams because they've scaled with all of this VC funding, they've got these fancy advertising campaigns. We know the brands, they're household names, some of them, but then it's like, they're not making money. It's like there's been a lot of smoke and mirrors. And from what I understand, because of that fallout, it's a lot harder to get funding because now funds are a little bit more like, well, can you show me like the dollars and cents and like prove to me that this is a profitable business? But yes, raising a ton of money can give you mass awareness, but it does not mean you're making money.
Brooke, you said it. That's the word. And it's interesting because I was talking to another founder about this and they're talking about this brand and this brand and this brand. And it's like, that brand actually doesn't have money. Like there is this, you know, facade we create or people think that you have this or that you have that. And that's why it's really about running your own race and figuring out what's going to be best for your business. And I will say this from a venture perspective and kind of coming and being in different venture communities, like valuation are flat. We're not doing these outsized valuations that were once happening. And there are a lot of questions being asked now in terms of profitability, in terms of EBITDA, like all of these things. What are you doing with these proceeds? How are you going to make this money back? Are you going to be able to make this money back? What's the risk versus the reward? How crowded is it? How many color cosmetics brands can you invest in that are going to drive a return? And that's the difference between venture funding and other funding. As venture capitalists, we're looking for an exit and we're looking for a return. And so if we have the ability, especially right now, to look at valuations for what they are, especially in the beauty industry, that's what we're going to do to protect everybody, right? And so profitability is real. It is something that we look at. And then I think the other thing too is that you have to figure out what's the right source of capital for you. It's been glamorized to get venture capital, but there's grants. There's all these other things. You know, we have founders who have raised $1 million through grants and pitch competitions. There's all of these other sources that you can look at and then determine if venture is going to be right for you. And then I would say just at the quick hit level, use the community. Ask you if you can be on the podcast, but use the community. Use other people to advance evangelize for you to talk about your brand, do the same. We talked a lot in the old day about loop giveaways, but the more that you can align yourself with other brands so that you can amplify what you're doing and not just have to just live on your own site, that's also another great way. Join the different organizations. I've mentioned several of them. Black Beauty Collective, an amazing way to get into retail and understand it before you go into the majors. Buy from a Black woman, like being part of a, you know, the largest membership directory. Even our ally organizations like Entreprenista, Female Founder Collective, there's all these things, visible figures that you can also integrate yourself into to help you create a larger amplification wheel so that people can understand about your brand. And then it goes back to what you said, social media, don't be scared to post. We have to do it. We have to do it.
Yes. I think one of the things that I'm really conscious of being, less than a year into my entrepreneurial journey is I want to keep my overhead low, right? So I don't want to bring on a bunch of people and have a huge team. And then you start to get to a point where you aren't able to sustain a team. But at the same time, you need to bring other people on to scale. You cannot do it all on your own. How do you encourage people to think about who those first few like critical hires are?
I'm a little biased because, as you can tell, I have a little PTSD that I've been resolving for myself. But I think there's kind of two things at play. Like, one, just because we can doesn't mean we should, right? And I do believe in founders paying themselves. We're not paying outsized, but I spent years not paying myself, even in starting it. And it is hard for us. And I don't think that it's good representation for the work that we do for ourselves or for our team. And so you have to kind of figure out this balance of what can I do? What should I be doing? What do I know that I need to release to others? And I think you have to look at the business and see where the business need you. Like, I talk to founders who are great chemists, but they're not necessarily good marketers, or good marketers who don't understand unit economics and don't understand budget. And so their first hire needs to look a little differently. So it goes back to being very honest with yourself. What is the best use of my time? What is my time worth as the founder, but also the person working in the business? Nobody can create a business unless you're, you know, your last name is Lauren, but no one can create a business as a founder and not have to work in it. Like, we are bootstrapping founders, many of us. And so it's really about where's the best use of my time. There's going to be jobs that we have to do, but not forever. And for me, I always think about, like, how do I protect my time, my team, and my IP? And I will not do anything now without legal, because had I had different legals in my earlier businesses, outcomes would have been different. And so, especially in beauty, when we're thinking about patents, trademarks, ingredients, like the protection, even just your name, you make sure that you're protected. And that doesn't mean you need a lawyer who charges $1,500 an hour, but you do have to make sure that you are protected and financed. Finance has been my Achilles heel. It has been my greatest thing, my worst thing. And I know where I end and begin in finance. That's why when I wanted to do a fund, I made sure I had a co-founder who had done that before, because I knew that me dealing with Carta, probably not the best use of my time. Me picking the hits and the winners like I've done my whole career, absolutely the best use of my time. And so I've had to stretch, and I can definitely understand a model. Does that mean I need to build it? And so we have to look at the varying degrees and what's going to be the detriment to our company, right? And I talk to a lot of founders who are like, I'm hiring a product development person. And I'm like, product development, what are your margins? Do you know the difference between glass and plastic? So maybe we need to get a fractional person who can help us understand our budget and our COGS and our margins. And then we can go into products, because maybe we don't need 42 SKUs. Maybe you need four, but that's going to come from data and it's going to come from budget. And so it really is this hard look at the business and what are going to be the barriers to move forward, being honest. And when you can, getting an outside consultant to just run the numbers for you and to just look at it to help. That, to me, those are some of the best uses of money, because when you do that right, the money will come and you can continue to build your team in the other areas.
I'm so happy you're talking about margin because I've released one product to date, which is a cashmere robe, 100% cashmere, which is a very expensive material. And when I worked with the woman I collaborated with on it, she was like, we have to price these at $695 to make money. So like, I said, I can't charge that for my audience. I don't want to price it above $400. She's like, great. So this is giving hobby. Like, you're not going to make any money. And I was like, I didn't realize that we'd have to charge. She's like, yeah, you have to think about margin. Now I'm doing my heatless hair rollers, which I'm so excited about because I have not seen a heatless hair roller marketed specifically for black hair. I've seen like the silk ones for straight hair. I'm so excited about it. I'm getting all of the bags embroidered with my new logo and brand identity. And they're charging me $9 just to embroider each bag because I have such a low quantity. And to make the rollers cost $15. Then we've got the embroidery. That's another. And I'm like, how much can one charge for, you know, hair curlers? I can't charge more than $50. That's absurd. So again, it's giving hobby, but I'm learning what it means to develop a product I care about and bring it to market in a meaningful way. And I've also kind of come to terms with the fact that these are my initial products are one, an amplification of what I believe in terms of like elevating the self-care ritual, but I'm using these kind of very early launches to learn about my audience, learn what works, learn what marketing channels are the strongest for me. Had I maybe listened to this discussion and learned more about margins, I would have approached things differently. Kendra, you try so many beauty products. You have so much access to beauty products. You've been in this industry for a long time and you're a beauty girl. I see you out in events, whether we're in the Hamptons or in LA, you're always giving us a beauty moment. So I actually want to know, and you know, your fund outside of your fund, I want to know your favorite beauty products. And I'm going to ask you in categories. So we're going to start and I'm looking at your like highlights and your like hair looks so good right now. You mentioned Curl Mix earlier, but what are your favorite hair brands? It could be to wash your hair. It could be hair accessories. It could be styling tools. Like what are your go-to hair favorites?
Okay, so I'm going to answer this, but I'm going to rephrase it because of my industry and my studio and my founders who are all building and creating extraordinary companies. I don't have favorites, but I do have brands that I use in the moment. So at any given moment, no matter where I am in the world, because as you know, depending upon where you are, you need different things. So in this current moment, not calling in a favorite, but calling something that I have now that helps me. So if we start with hair, I am on the Beauty of Success Books Plus Bubbles book tour, which has turned into a 20 plus book tour. And so I'm fortunate that Parfait has come on as my hair wig partner. And so I am obsessed. I wasn't really a wigs person. I love wigs.
Wigs are so intimidating to me.
They are. And what I realized is like with Parfait, they don't have to be because they're using AI. So you literally take your phone, you take three photos front and sides, and the AI matches your wig based upon your skin tone, your hair texture, your hair color. And so it's literally like, I call it Wigs for Dummies. I'm talking to myself because I'm also not a hair person in that way, but I've just been obsessed with the different looks and them coming on board. They are, transparently, we are an investor in Parfait. And I say that because before I invest in something, I try it and I try everything else. And so there are some people who are creating great wigs and weaves, but as part of my tour and as part of where I am right now, Parfait.
Okay. I'm definitely going to check out Parfait. Skincare is my favorite category. I don't know why. I feel like makeup, there's only so much makeup you can use, but skincare, I feel like I can never have enough. I just love skincare.
Oh my, I love skincare. And it's interesting because it is kind of what you need. So, you know, we've moved to Vegas. We kept our house in LA. So I've been going back and forth. I fly every week and I've been having like some dark patches because Vegas is a little bit drier. And so
just a little bit. It's literally like Vegas is like, between the like harsh air conditioning and all of the hotels and like, some of these casinos, people still smoke. And like, I feel like I spent a weekend in Vegas and I'm like, I've aged 5 years. Like, I don't know. People that live in Vegas, I'm like, because it's so arid and hot and the sun is so intense outside. And then inside it's just like AC and Vegas is rough on the skin. Okay. So yes.
Yes. So it's like things that I didn't have to do before I've had to do. And so of course, BeautyStat in terms of their microbiome mask is just yummy and it's everything. I do not go to sleep without Relevance night mask. every time Mikayo gets so sick of me, every time I'm like, oh my God, girl, I love this. I like keep it by my nightstand. I don't go to sleep without it. I also don't get on the plane without it because it is so crucial. I also really love Loved One.
Yes.
Loved
One.
And amazing, like it feels so good in terms of their mask and their cleanser. And I'm like obsessed with it. I also really love Skin and Senses. They have an amazing, even my mom, they have this amazing oil that does wonders. And there's so many, but it's just, it's yeah. Like yummy, yummy, yummy.
So Skin and Senses is the only brand mentioned that I don't know, but I want to just go back to Beauty Stat for a moment, because Ron Robinson, who is the chemist and founder behind Beauty Stat, I have so much trust in him as a founder and a chemist that at this point, whatever they make, because I think he's done a really good job of telling his story, explaining the efficacy of the ingredients. I think his vitamin C was the very first product I tried. Now I'm using their brand new product that just launched, the peptide wrinkle relaxing cream, which is like incredible. And then you read about all of the clinic. I actually had him send me an email. I was like, I have questions about this because this is feels very special. And he explained to me about all the clinical trials that they did. And also, this connects to Loved One. People that invest in skincare clinical trials that keep melanin in mind, because we know, you yes. and I both know, a lot of these products are not developed with us in mind. Like, we are very much an afterthought. So to have more Black founders, like what John Legend's been able to do with Loved One and what Ron Robinson does. And again, these products are for everyone, every skin type. But to have melanated people so central to the research is a game changer.
Oh my gosh, it really is. And it's been central to what they do. And I love how you say it. We know that both products, like anyone can use them based upon what your needs are. But the fact, the time, the energy, the data. I was talking to another founder out of the UK who was saying that, you know, I don't want to get the stat wrong, but it was illegal at one point to test products on brown skin. And she was going through the history and I'm like, illegal. It's one thing to be left out. It's another for it to be illegal. And so I do love the intentionality of making sure that we're protected in terms of our skin and then being able to share it. But it is, you know, the other thing I've been doing, like the topicals under eye patches.
Oh my gosh. I just use those because I feel cute with them. It's literally, it's giving accessory more than skincare. Yeah. I'm like, this is a moment, but it speaks again to the power of a brand and creating a community. Like Lamide and her team have done such a great job of creating a vibe with topicals where like, it just feels cool.
Yes, it is. It's so cool. Like the packaging and Skin and Senses, I've got to send you some. You will love Skin and Senses.
I love it. Okay. Cosmetics. You've got a beautiful red lip on. Did you do your makeup today? It looks so good.
Oh my gosh, thank you. I did. And here's the crazy part. Like I had flown in because we were in Atlanta, LA, and Charlotte for the book tour. And my flight was late and I flew in and I was like, oh my gosh, I need to show up for Brooke. And I was, this was so quick in the bathroom.
Wow.
So thank you.
It looks great. I need to know everything you've got on your face right now.
Well, I'm wearing, this is Cake Batter. I actually have it next to me because before we got on, I was like, let me throw on a lip. I love pound cake.
This is kind of weird. Why do I have it right next to me also? Yes. This is crazy. Yes.
Well, this is me. I literally keep it next to me and I do keep it in the box because I think the box, it inspires me because it's yellow and I love
yes.
it. It's by my desk and I'm like, okay, I'm ready.
Yes. Cake Batter, for people listening, is I think she specializes in red lipstick. Right. And it was this whole idea that, oh, red lipstick doesn't look good on Black women. And she was like, it absolutely does. In fact, I think it looks better on us than anyone else. And she created this just incredible liquid lipstick that also smells like cake batter. Like it's delicious.
It's so true. I literally, and like, I wasn't a red lip person because I've always had such fuller lips. And I remember in middle school and people, I went to a predominantly white school and people would like tease and now it's like all the rage, but I never really did a red lip and I love it. And they have so many different shades. And so it's become my go-to. And then I'm also wearing a mix of Glamazon, Ken Baker, Ashinta Sheriff Beauty. First of all, Ashinta Sheriff's magnetic eyelash is everything.
I need this because lash glue, it can be very irritating and difficult to take off. And I always see these ads for these magnetic lashes, but I'm like, the skeptic in me, I don't know why I'm so skeptical about marketing. I'm like, did this work? So it works.
Well, hers worked. I can say it's crazy because I'm like a lash extension, take 3 hours. Like I don't have time to do this. And it's phenomenal. Like the magnetic, the liner is truly like one of the best because I was trying to figure out how to go in between. And, you know, Ashunta Sheriff, she's a long-term award-winning celebrity makeup artist, has her own line, has been an entrepreneur several times over. And just, which I think kind of speaks to what we were saying about Ron being a chemist. You trust her in terms of what's going to happen.
How do you spell the name? Because I just, is it Ashunta Sheriff? Am I saying that correctly?
It's A-S-H-U-N-T-A.
Okay.
And S-H-E-R-I-F-F.
And we'll link everything in the show notes. And then the liquid lip, we got so excited about it because we both have it on our desk, but that's the pound cake liquid lip.
We did. And then I always start with Lamique. So Lamique is Kim Roxy and I love her brow palette. And so I always kind of like base that. And then I just go between a few different combinations. If I'm going out, I use Glamatoria and Glamazon. They have like such great pigment. I love glitter. Let's just be clear. I do love glitter. And then there are so many other just like great Black owned palettes like Oma Beauty. There's some really fantastic ones that have such good rich pigment, Juvia's Place.
Yes.
And also my makeup artist, Jessica's Beauty Chair. So I do my lips with pound cake. And then if I wanted to glisten, I use her gloss. So Jessica's Beauty Chair, it's a new gloss that's come out. And so it's just a lot of fun, but that's what
I love it. Doing. Okay. Final category, fragrance. And this is, I've been developing a fragrance for a year and I've actually been talking to Nikeo, our friend and co-founder of 13 Loon. I'm like, I need to do my launch at 13 Loon. I need to have it at 13 Loon. And I have become obsessed with fragrance. I could literally spend all day speaking about fragrance. And I actually love the 13 Stems fragrance from Relevant Skin. But what are your go-to fragrances?
So it's so funny because I also have to pick up on my desk. This is like my go-to every day. It's so easy and I don't have an issue with overdoing it.
Yes. Or it's a like little rollerball fragrance, which is so nice.
And fragrance is just, it smells so yummy. I absolutely love it. I also really love Chris Collins, especially, let's take it back to our Ralph Lauren roots. We are going to show some of our Ralph Lauren.
Yes. What was the name of that like archive we would have to use to find all, was it Polo Vision or there was some thing you would log in and you would type in like man with polo and you would get all of the approved images. But yes, I feel like I saw that man's face every day of my life. Him, Tyson Beckford, you know, it's like those, there was that blonde model. What was her name? She had a Russian name anyway, but yes, Chris Collins.
Yes. I'm such a fan. Like, to your point, he's also so pleasant to look at. So as we had to go through the archives, it was like, I can look at this a lot.
Right, exactly.
And the brand is fantastic. And I've known him and I went to his launch at Nordstrom and just seeing him interact and how the people responded to the fragrance. It's phenomenal because it's tricky to do it without a retail environment and then being online. And there's another brand, this phenomenal woman who she's young. Her brand is, it starts
Our side.
With I think
Hedda it's just- is her name. She's a Harvard grad. It's sold at Credo Beauty. She's been on the pod. We love Hedda. And I think what she's doing is so cool. Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I didn't even think about what it means to be a Black person in the fragrance space. I just like love fragrance. I was excited to do it. But as I've been just researching, I'm just like, wow, there aren't many Black people in the fragrance space. And I'm grateful that I have a partner that's doing a lot of the back end work for me because it is a very difficult market to enter. I feel like it's a space that's going to grow a lot. And it's a great, I feel like fragrance is a great way to do storytelling and like express, like for me, my fragrance, like I want it to feel like Naked Beauty.
Yeah. Oh my God. And Naked Beauty fragrance,
you're already there.
Yeah, you're already there. I'm so glad you're doing it. I think it's so important. And what I have been learning as we do diligence into fragrance and diligence through our, as we think about what is the category doing, there's so much opportunity there. And I have so many ideas in fragrance that I can share with you, but
oh my gosh, yeah, I would love to hear.
Oh, yeah. It's a phenomenal category. It's growing. I think there's so much room for Black founders. I love what Brown Girl Jane and Ty are doing in terms of transforming their brands into fragrance and how they're expanding their retail footprint. I love me some Brown Girl Jane.
Yes. Okay. I have two final questions for you. Actually, three final questions. One is, how do you tap into confidence? I think you're such a confident speaker. You can tell that you just feel at home in what you're saying. I always feel that you are your true, authentic self. But for people listening that just want to tap into their own confidence at work in their personal life, what tips do you have?
Thank you for saying that. I really appreciate that because there was a time that I actually credit DBA. Like when I first started doing DBA, it was because Karen and I had this great idea and we knew that there was an opportunity in a market. But it wasn't until after DBA that I felt confident enough to say, this is what I'm good at. This is what I do well. And this is how I know that I can make a difference. And so it does take time. And that was after becoming the youngest vice president at Fleishman Hillard, one of the largest PR agencies in the world, being the first director of digital media at Ralph Lauren, and then starting what would later change the whole industry for influencers and still kind of a little bit wobbly, right? And so it was after that that I really was like, sis, you are good at developing brands. You're good at picking winners. You're good at brand strategy. You are great at connecting. And even in the book in chapter 4, Ego Who Me, I talk a lot about it because especially as Black women, we say we're good at it and then people look at us funny or, you know, it's all these things, even as just women, regardless of race. And so there's this healthy balance of being able to say what you're good at, claim what you're good at, do and show it, that doesn't necessarily involve ego. Ego is something different when we think about how we're using that to manipulate situations or how we're isolating ourselves and not involving our team. And so that was an important chapter for me to talk about because it is important for us to understand what we're good at, claim what we're good at. But again, it goes back to what I said earlier and show what we're good at. I can say that I'm here to be of service to founders, but the reason that I can speak so confidently is because I'm doing the work. I created a fund. I created a report so that I can show you. I check the data. I do the work. And so for me, if I'm doing the work and I've created the platforms to show that I'm doing the work, then I should be able to confidently and passionately talk about what makes me special and what makes our work special. And I think that because we get so caught up in what other people are doing, we forget to go into the success that we have every day, as well as what makes us special and what makes us unique. And we have to hold on to that so that it makes it easier for us to walk into rooms and be confident.
I love this point you have about having the data to back it up, because I think back to, again, let's bring it back to Ralph Lauren, when I would go in and I would do these little conversations with my mom and my dad. My dad was an executive recruiter, a headhunter. My mom was in corporate her whole career. What they would help me do is, okay, you want a promotion, you want a raise, you want to make more money. You need to go into that office and say, I've grown the Pinterest channel by this much. We're converting at X percent higher. We've grown our Instagram by this many followers. You told us that Brazil is a target market. We're growing in Brazil by X. You cannot just go in and ask for more money or for a promotion without having the data to back it up. And that was, I mean, so critical for me to learn how to advocate for myself in my career, because since then, at every single job I've been, tech, you have to do this. You basically cannot ask for any additional compensation without having the numbers to back it up. But it is, no matter what field you work in, having that data, like having that proof, because that can't be, that cannot be argued with. That is like what gives you the confidence. And what, if you've got the numbers, then you walk in and you ask for what you deserve based on the numbers.
You know what? I love you for saying that. And it's funny because it's kind of a geeky thing, but it you can't dispute it. We can have conversations all day about the benefits of affirmative action, the benefits that diverse teams perform better, all of these things. But until you can show people the data, it is undisputable. And right. So it's so important that we highlight it. And literally, I was talking to Leslie Roberson, the founder of Black Beauty Collective, because she spent her career in HR. My mom was HR, like okay. Your family. So she was like, you know what? You have to do it regularly. At the end of every week, you have to write down what were the things that you impacted about the company? What were your wins? And it's the same way I say to people, we can't create this list of goals that's going to take us all year to do, and that becomes our only success metric. We have to look at it every day, every week, and write it and track it. And so when we think about the data, what are the data points that help you create the narrative or put you into the position that you want to be or help you create the product that you want to create? Because you're going to have to say, why? Why did you do this? What is the market landscape? Why is your product this? And so being able to use that muscle to write it down, what are the data points that I need to actively be tracking? It makes such a difference when it comes time to say, yes, here's where I should get this or do that.
Okay, well, follow-up question to this. What if you prepare and you look at the numbers and you actually realize that the numbers aren't on your side and you're not actually ready for the next step? What do you do then?
Oh, well, my dear friend, Catherine Finney wrote that book, How to Build the Damn Thing, Even If You're Not a Rich White Man. So if we're not a rich white man, to just act as though it doesn't matter and we're going to move forward with it. So here's another chapter in my new book, The Beauty of Success. And the chapter is Know When to Pivot to Thrive and Survive. And so there have been times, and as entrepreneurs, we think our ideas are the best. We know it all. And there have been times when I have looked at something that I thought was going to perform well. Like I just had the team work on something last year. And I was like, this is going to be it. We're going to generate so much revenue. It's going to be crazy. Let's start figuring out who to hire. And when I tell you, girl, the numbers came back and it was not working and I couldn't figure it out. And I kept being like, let's tweak the time. And then I had to look at the utilization of how much time I had my team working on this one idea that clearly wasn't performing. And I said, well, it takes 3 months, guys. It takes 3 months to know if it's going to work. And like, I had to pivot away from that idea and to figure out another way to do it, to generate revenue. Because it wasn't working. And it's really hard whenever you want something, you feel like you should have something, but it's just not performing, even from a SKU. If a SKU continues to not sell and you've invested R&D and done all these things, and the consumer research is telling you it's not going to do it, cut bait, right? Wow. But it's hard to get rid of the things that we love or that we create. And even when I was leaving DBA, starting Brain Trust, I remember the same Catherine Finney was like, it's okay to outgrow something, especially if it's not aligned with your center and it's not working. And so we have to have the courage to pivot so that we can not just survive, but that we can thrive into something else.
That's so helpful to hear. And you're doing this book tour, so you're able to basically meet and talk to founders, and I'm sure you're getting lots of feedback from the book. I'm curious, what has been just a consistent theme in what's resonated with people from the book?
Thank you for asking. To me, like one of the most fun parts and impactful parts of the book is that, like I said, it's me, but it's the 18 other stories, but throughout the book are different worksheets. So I don't just talk about your pillars, but there is a complete fill in the blank about how do you identify your pillars? People really love understanding, claiming your non-negotiables. How do you do that? How do you track that? How do you really hone in terms of being able to stand in your power? What does that look like? How do you know that you're doing it? And then the other thing is there's the last chapter that actually includes Nikeo and then Ron Robinson is this notion of like finding your people, character, and allyship. Mm-hmm. And I think so oftentimes we are doing things because it's the right thing to do. We're in community with this person because we feel like we have to. But when you really find the character within you and others, and you really find those right allies, I think that that's really the beauty of success. And so at every stop, it's really been resonating. Like I just got back from Charleston and it was one of our most diverse and unique, you know, and I had never even been to Charleston. And we all talked about our ability to come together with this same belief of support. And the last thing I'll say is that I am wearing a Kendra Scott necklace. So Kendra Scott designed this necklace. It's engraved with the word success. Press, and they have been hosting book tour events. We just did one in Atlanta. We're going to DC, Orlando, and Austin for South by Southwest, and Veronica Beard, who has been our clothing partner and hosting events in their store. And both of those brands are donating 20% of the proceeds from those events to Brain Trust Founders Studio to underwrite memberships. And so wow. When we go into those stores and we think about the impact, and we think about brands who have made commitments, and it comes down to the character that you have based upon the commitment that you set to support others, the allyship that we create, because we can't do anything on our own. And we actually need each other, other race, other genders, other all these things to do it. And then when we truly think about things being greater than we could ever imagine, I think that that's really been the part where people get excited, because you can actually see it. It's a data point. It's working.
Yes. I mean, you are incredible. You make me want to work so much harder. Like, yeah, I think I'm working hard, but I still have Kendra levels to aspire to. You are just phenomenal. And I'm so grateful that you are sharing your success, and you're sharing the tools, and you're sharing the failures as well, right? Like, you sharing your story is so helpful for so many people. You know, Naked Beauty, you know what my last question is going to be. And it is, when do you feel most beautiful?
I didn't want to think about it so I could be in the moment. It's a little cliche, but it's not, but kind of two times. I love the morning. It is my most precious and sacred time of the day. I really try and force myself to sleep till 5 a.m. because I'm just like so ready to have my morning. But gosh, I just feel so beautiful, like waking up, lighting a candle as the sun comes up, being able to really go deep into prayer and meditation and get work done. Like I say to the team, give me till 5 a.m. because I can write so many things. And it's such a feeling of beauty internally and externally, because I'm feeding my soul and I'm able to be still. You know, we move so fast. And so it's such a beautiful time. And then really just the being with my family. I travel so much and I love work. One of those people where God was like, let me get you a husband and a child. Otherwise, you will just be consumed with it. And so they just give me something greater than myself to see beauty in all things of who I am, no matter what and what's going on. Mm. And so really the two times where it's just like this nakedness of who you are, but in the true beauty of everything that empowers you, that ignites you, and really just inspires me to be the best version of myself.
Oh, amazing. Amazing. Well, thank you so much. I'm so excited to read the full book. And I feel like we have to figure out a way for like Naked Beauty and Brain Trust to come together and do something impactful for the community, because there's just so much overlap. And I'm just honored and excited to know you.
Oh my, you too, Brooke. That's what I said. Thank you. Thank you for creating these spaces. Thank you for being so real. Like, you literally just sat here and told us the unit economics for your brands and margins and costs. Thank you for doing that. People need to hear it so that they understand the truth of what's happening whenever you want to create a product and be a founder and an entrepreneur. And so thank you for having me.
Let's do it. We'll do a dinner soon.
Yes. Thank you.
You'll know real when you get it. It will say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like a gem, sneakers and streetwear so fresh every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things that you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts. Real people who love this stuff with real hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue check mark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms. Okay, that was Kendra Bracken Ferguson. And as I told my producer, as soon as that call ended, I was like, Kendra just makes me want to work harder. She just goes so hard for everything she believes in. I find her to be so inspiring. I hope you all were as inspired as I was. And I hope her book is already in your cart. I have linked to all of the incredible products we've discussed in the show notes. Support those as well. And I will be back next week with an incredible new episode. Thank you all so much for listening.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.